This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. It's fantastic to have you listening. My name is Sharon Hartley. I live in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Used to be a daily drinker, ramped it up at weekends, and I now no longer drink. Life-changing stuff. I don't do this on my own. With me is my co-host.
Hello, I'm Freddie. I am 38 years old, having just celebrated my first sober birthday in a very, very long time. I live in Liverpool. I'm a dad to a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old and a husband to Sarah. I was once the fun time Freddie party boy, but I am now proudly alcohol-free Freddie. And I would never have imagined a year ago that I would be a person to stop drinking. But here I am today, and I'm excited to get into this episode.
And we've also got Background Ben. Hello, Background Ben.
Hi, I'm the producer, and I'm flirting with giving up alcohol all the time.
You see his eyes then? Yeah.
Now, I'm changing my relationship with alcohol, but I'm reducing rather than cutting out completely.
Which is a great place to start for this episode, because we want to talk about the shift. Not necessarily giving up alcohol completely and turning your life into a full-on alcohol-free zone, but the shift from, think back to the noughties, the early noughties, the 90s, and how culture's changing, drinking culture's changing, workplaces changing, more about health, mindset, better living. We're going to look at the shift in drinking, talk about sober celebrities, sober Instagram accounts, and how things are definitely changing in society when it comes to alcohol.
Yep, absolutely. I think a main thing there also is looking to the future. And we're certainly going to look at the past and how everything in our, certainly in the Western world, has revolved around alcohol. But looking forward to the future, how things are going to change and how it really feels like we are on the crest of an alcohol-free wave, and how it's going to hopefully help a lot of us as we go forward with our lives.
So before we look ahead to these changes that are taking place in society with regard to alcohol-free living, I think it's really important that we delve into our past, Freddie, and have a look. And I tell you something, Facebook memories have got a huge part to play in this. Do you ever click on when it says, see your memories from a year ago, 2 years ago, and it brings up these hideous pictures of you sloshed in a bar or slumped over a flower pot, vomiting up your night's intake. Anyway, I digress. Let's go back to the past, Freddie. Take us back to the beginning.
Wow. Let me try and move all these skeletons in my closet out of the way to try and go into those deep, dark past. So, you know, I was a child of the 90s. You know, I was born in 1982. I started drinking when I was a teenager in the 90s. And that in the UK was the height of the lad and the ladette culture. It was all, you know, hey, drinking, oi, 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 yeah, get the beers in, oh, I was sick last night, oh, you legend, and all those sorts of things. And I was massively part of that. So I think certainly in the 90s, and I remember the very first time I got drunk, I must have been like 14 or 15. I had a party at home, had some drinks. I was falling over. My baggy white jeans got covered in mud. My baggy Reebok hoodie just got vomit all down it. It was horrific, but it was okay, because back in those days, you saw all the celebrities falling out of pubs. And that certainly in the UK, and I believe in the US and certainly places in Australia, that's when getting drunk was a badge of honour. I know certainly, and Shazza, I know obviously you being a female and me not being a female, you may have a better perspective than me, but it was certainly the case when binge drinking really got turned up to 11. It was the time when you could be proud of getting drunk. When I think certainly for our parents, our grandparents, it was a lot more about being steady and moderating and maybe letting yourself have that nice one drink at Christmas or in the evening, unless you grew up in my household, which was properly alcohol soaked and everything else. But that's probably something to delve into on another day. But certainly in the 90s, it was all about getting as drunk as you could, vomiting, doing it again, having fun with your mates. It was a great time. It was cool Britannia, and it was cool to get drunk. And I absolutely loved it. I've talked about in a previous episode how I found I had a real talent for drinking, and I embraced it, and it was a great thing to do. But now we're in current society, it doesn't quite seem so cool.
And I think with that, I think a lot of it is we've grown up.
Yeah.
You know, when did I start drinking? Crikey. So I was born in 73. So again, it'll have been late 80s. I'm rubbish at sums. As a teenager, I remember being 14, 15, 16, and it would be a bottle of White Lightning on the sand dunes in Blackpool. Classy. A particular low point was a can of Special Brew. Horrific. Wow. Awful. Like you, Freddie, I joined in with everybody. It was the thing to do. Spent most of my time not enjoying it and throwing up.
Did you have a fake ID?
I never had fake ID.
Oh, I did. I took a trip with some like schoolmates. I think we'd just finished our GCSE exams when we were 16 years old. I had my nicely polished fake ID showing that I was like 25 or something. Took it down to the local nightclub. I think it was a foam party, so it was proper.
Brilliant,
90s.
Very 90s.
And the bouncer took one look and he just confiscated it. And I spent the rest of my holiday terrified that like the SWAT teams and the SAS were going to bash down my caravan door and cart me off. But it was that whole thing when you're growing up in that kind of world, like our lives revolved around drinking. It was who's old enough to get served,
of course,
who can get a drink, what shops or pubs will sell you a drink. And it almost became all encompassing. And I think we've got to take a bit of a real life look at it as we always try to do. And I think teenagers are still like that. God, I sound old saying this.
You sound ancient.
I'm like, oh yeah, kids these days. Obviously, you know, I think as a teenager, you're always going to want to get a bit drunk, no matter what, you know, what generation we're in or what decade it is. But there was something about the drinking culture when it was just turbocharged.
Yeah.
And all you wanted to do was to get drunk or to be seen to get drunk or to say, you know, I was quite a geeky kid at school. Like, I wasn't always as uncool as I am now. I was quite geeky. I wasn't one of the cool kids, but I still want, you know, me and my cool kids in the Dungeons and Dragons club, we still wanted to go and get drunk and everything. Don't start dissing tabletop wargaming, by the way. Like, it was super cool. So I didn't have a girlfriend until I was about 19. But even then, you do want to be accepted. And certainly as a teenager, what you want to do is be part of the crowd and you want to be accepted. And usually what that involves is having a drink.
And that sets the precedent, doesn't it? When you move on into, I'm not going to say later life, when you move on from those teenage years into a working environment, or prior to that, college, uni. I remember my days at uni. I could go out and get sloshed on a fiver and a taxi home, you know. And I think back to those days, and it set the precedent to becoming an adult drinker, where I used to just drink as much as I can, as fast as I can, to get the result as quickly as possible, which was to get sloshed. But it never ended well.
No.
Always ended up throwing up somewhere, or obviously too much, too soon, too quickly.
I agree. Like, we can't get preachy about it. It's like, you know, newsflash, university students like getting drunk.
Yeah.
Who would have thought it? But I think certainly for me, you know, I had that, you know, at university, it was all that, you know, it was Monday night, Wednesday night, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, you'd be on it. But what was different for me was when I supposedly grew up, it was, and I'd left college and uni and I went into the world of work when I was supposed to be a bit older and a bit more responsible. To be honest, I turned up another notch after that, because then you're in this new environment where you've got people that you work with and you want to be accepted and you want to be part of the team and you want to impress your boss.
Which is exactly what you've just talked about when you're a teenager, wanting to be part of that drinking group, isn't it?
Definitely. And so the difference, to be honest, between the teenage and the student version of me and the young adult version of me, well, I just had more money to spend on getting drunk. So yeah, I stopped drinking cider and started drinking like Continental Strength Lager to feel really edgy. And I was still drinking hard. It was accepted. And we talk about teenagers and students, but then at work, it would be, in my job, it was a fairly stressful career. And it was the whole badge of honour. Who can be out at 2 a.m. and then be at their desk at 7 a.m?
Expecting to function and put in a decent day's work.
And because you know you weren't going to be successful at work if you weren't impressing your boss by how many shots you could drink, or your colleagues coming in the next day saying, oh yeah, you're such a legend, he's such a good guy. And again, I love that because you felt accepted. And at the time, it was too big a step for me and it felt too much of a challenge to be the one person in my team that said, actually, hang on, I'm not going to drink tonight. Because I had those times where I said, I'm not going to drink this week or this today. And then all you need is a colleague saying, come on, mate, you've had a tough day. Let's go for a bit. And you'd be like, yeah, okay, then I've earned this. I've deserved this treat. And that's all accepted.
When I was in my 20s, my career began in radio, in commercial radio. And it was freebie after freebie after freebie after corporate event and come to the opening of this. And I would go to the opening of an envelope if there was free alcohol. And I think that's when my drinking became a problem. It ramped up because it was just the thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and then fast forward into my 30s, you've got children, married, tired. I then just began to drink more at home.
Mm.
And that, again, you know, it was deemed acceptable.
Because we always give ourselves excuses. And
my excuse was there was a why on the end of the day.
Yeah.
Simple as that. You know, I'm tired, it's a Monday. I'm tired, it's a Tuesday. Oh, this has happened, it's a Wednesday. Mm. Any excuse to crack a wine, basically.
Exactly. I think when I started drinking, even when I was like, I was a student, for God's sake. I didn't have any stresses in the world at all. Like, yeah, you've got to go to some lectures and do some writing and exams, but not real life stress. But then when you have kids and you do have a mortgage to pay and a job, that's when you give yourself even more excuses. So at that time in your life when you want to be focused more than ever, and you know deep down you should be focusing on your family and trying to do a good job in your career, or at least not getting fired and, you know, providing for your family, then you've got all these excuses to try and undo that by having more and more drink. And that's what I found.
Don't you find, Freddie, that drinking and the amount and the frequency, it creeps up on you?
Yeah.
And it did with me. And before you know it, you're thinking, hang on a minute, I'm cracking the wine every night here.
Yeah.
Is this normal? Is this acceptable? Is it okay? Well, actually, all the Facebook accounts I follow, you know, it's wine o'clock, mummy's drinking time. Of course it's okay. You know, there's no problem. And it's so accepted and it's so normalised, isn't it? Regardless of age or where you're at in your life, it's perfectly normal to do that because that's what the rest of the world is doing.
Yeah, I think, and that's still something that we see today. And that's why I've talked before about we are the rebels. We are doing something differently. We've had things, we had an incident a few months ago where we had a break in and the police came round and everything. The police officer, the people that deal with alcohol-related crime and injuries more than anyone else, the police officer was there saying, yeah, you're going to pour yourself a big whiskey tonight, aren't you? And me being polite, I was like, yes, officer, that's right. And part of me was thinking, well, hang on, the police say I should have a drink, so maybe I should. And society still says, we all say it without thinking, oh yeah, you've earned a drink, you've earned this, this is a reward, when it makes it really easy to have a blip and to take yourself away from your alcohol-free journey.
But I think it's fair to say now, fast forward, and society is changing massively. Whether that's because we've removed alcohol and we notice it more, or because of social media, of people putting it out there, and people are encouraged these days, aren't they, to be honest and not to be ashamed of the lives they're living. Freddie, when we did our Sober Social a couple of months ago, we thought it'd be a brilliant idea to do an alcohol-based quiz. And one of the rounds was focused on all the sober celebrities these days. There are so many, aren't there, that have come to the fore and put their hands up and said, you know what, I've changed it.
Yeah, exactly. I think, say, looking back at the 90s, then you'd see all the celebrities having falling out of the nightclubs, getting into all sorts of bother because they were drinking. But now there does seem to be a difference. And one thing that's quite important to me in my alcohol-free journey is looking for role models. And they could be people that you know or that you've connected with on social media, but also people in the celebrity world. So, you know, off the top of my head, you've got people like Tom Hardy, Russell Brand, Demi Lovato, Bradley Cooper, all these super successful celebrities that fully very open with the fact that they wouldn't have their level of success and fame and fortune if they hadn't stopped drinking. And the one person who's always resonated with me was Robert Downey Jr., because I love a superhero story, and he's someone who properly fell off the wagon. He was properly under the influence, to coin a phrase. Yeah, he did prison time because of his drug and alcohol addiction. But now look at him. He got sober, he quit alcohol, and now he's one of the most successful actors in Hollywood. And the reason why it resonates with me, and you're probably going to get another Freddie phrase here, but I think I think of myself as in my own superhero movie. And that is not saying, look at me, I'm such a great hero. But we love a story, and especially a superhero movie, where the hero has to go through a tough time and where they have to fall and then rise again. I would not go and pay to see a movie where the hero is perfect, where they breeze through life, yeah, where they say, yeah, this is great, everything's easy, look at me, I'm perfect. We want to see people that struggle, that strive, that fail, that fall, but then somehow they can rise again like the phoenix from the ashes. And that's what, you know, ironically happens in Robert Downey Jr.'s movies, because he's Iron Man, but also in his life. And that's what I try and tell myself. And when other people talk to me and they've been like, well, you know, I've tried to stop drinking and I've fallen and I've failed. I'm like, that's, you have to think in the story of your life, that is a much more compelling, it's a richer, it's a more rewarding story. And that's certainly been my story as well. I've fallen so many times, and once, just once, I was able to rise and move forward. But we all know, and celebrities can teach us a lot, it isn't just about making loads of money and looking perfect on Instagram. I think they can teach us that by changing your habits and your behaviours and the way you want to live your life, you can get unimaginable success.
I completely agree. And also, though, I think it's really important. What I've really enjoyed in this whole process is using social media. Mm. And actually, people that aren't celebrities, normals, you know, all the Instagram accounts out there, I can't even reel the names off. There are so many people who have gone...
The Gay Sober,
he's one of my favourite accounts. He is absolutely brilliant. In fact, he's going to be a guest on one of our podcasts in the future. He's got awesome. So much to say. He's so much fun, and he's turned his life around, and it's joyous to listen to it. Millie Gooch, the Sober Girl Society. Speaking from a purely female point of view, I used to really enjoy all the... you know, Why Mummy Drinks This, and all these blogs that were based on the hardships of motherhood and, oh, crikey, it's so hard being a parent and working at the same time. But if you have a glass of wine at 7 o'clock, forget the glass, finish the bottle, you know, life will be okay. Mm. I've deleted them all. I don't need that anymore. And I've now swapped it for all the sober accounts. And they're not preachy. They're not going, oh, life is brilliant without alcohol. Mm. But they are showing that there is another way. And I do find them incredibly inspiring, just hearing from ordinary folk, changing the narrative and showing that, you know, life is still it's better in yeah. many ways without alcohol.
Definitely. It's not easier. It's just better. There's still the trials. There's still the tribulations. There's still things that we struggle with. But seeing people out there in the public eye that are very much saying, look, I've got a problem here. And I'm not saying that you have to have a problem to even change your relationship with alcohol or to give up drinking. But it is saying, I want to live my life in a different way. And I think if I do that, I don't see any social media accounts where people are saying, yeah, I've given up drinking and my life is much, yeah. much worse because of it. Yeah. Stuff still happens, but we're so much more confident and stronger, and we have so much more self-belief to be that superhero in our own story.
Can I jump in quickly?
Of course you can, Ben.
Because for me, I've never watched Made in Chelsea. It's not my kind of TV, but I follow Spencer Matthews.
Okay.
Because he's very famously now sober, having gone from that party boy Essex lifestyle. Mm. But he put something on Instagram the other day. I'd really recommend following him, saying it's hard to explain how regular alcohol consumption can actually change the kind of person you are, how it changes your nature.
Yeah.
It's everything.
And actually, for me, following Spencer Matthews, even though I am drinking a little bit, I'm still finding it difficult to cut down as much as I have done. And it is amazing how following people like that can just kind of remind you in the middle of your day where you go, oh, actually, you know what? Yeah, it is a good thing.
We do think that celebrities have this amazing pampered lifestyle where it's all like, you know, champagne every day yeah. and being driven around in your limousine and everything else. But it's difficult to say because I know it is so difficult to believe, but they do have stresses and pressures like all of us. And like all of us, if, you know, when life gets hard, you immediately think, oh, I could do with a drink right now. And if anything, being in that public eye makes it more stressful and more difficult. I think if they can do it, then, you know, if I turned around tomorrow and had a drink, no one would know about it apart from me. If you're Spencer Matthews, or if Russell Brand got back on the drink, it would be front page news. Yeah. And his life would be, you know, massively compromised by it. But I think the fact that they can have that strength, and the fact that they are strong enough looking at that shift in society to come out and say, look, I'm living my life differently now and I'm quite happy and proud of it, I think it's an amazing thing.
I think something you just said then, Ben, as well about Spencer's account, talking about the change in it as a person, it's terrifying. It's terrifying in a good way. I think back to the person I was when I was drinking and the person I am now. And to coin the old Greatest Showman phrase, this is me and this is as good as it gets now. And actually, I really, really like it. I'm not as shouty. I'm not as stressed. I'm not as angry. I'm not as tetchy. When's it 9 o'clock? You know, and as we said in a previous podcast, it's removed all that noise and it just makes you go, oh, it's okay. This is really quite good.
No, definitely. I think our lives are a result of the story that we tell ourselves. And I told myself a story for so long that I was stressed, I was depressed, I was unfit. I told myself I had to be at the bar every night because that's who I was and that was my story. But it is possible to change that story. You can tell yourself a different tale and you can make whatever story you want about your life. But it does show that change is possible. We don't have to be the person that we used to be. And we can then move on and evolve and become anything we want.
We just want to take a moment out of this episode of Over the Influence and say a couple of huge thank yous to those who have so kindly donated to what we're doing. Obviously, listening to podcasts is completely free, but making them isn't. Simon Kirkman, thank you. You said that you really enjoyed listening and you enjoyed it that much. You said to have a coffee on you. We will. Thank you. It's really, really appreciated and really kind. The lovely Harvey, he's gone in again and bought us another brew. Super kind, Harvey. Thank you. It all really does help. We put it towards our production costs, our marketing costs. We've had a couple of comments on social media as well. Potter Pickle, brilliant name, who's listening down under. She says, never mind me and Freddie, she's not interested. She says that she loves background Ben. So do we, Potter. And I just want to mention Joe and Stuart, who are just trying, they're dabbling, they've dipped their toes into alcohol-free life. They're 3 months in now and they're saying never say never, which I think is what me and Freddie say, to be honest with you. But they're saying that it's looking like alcohol-free life is the future for them. I know Stuart's necking the ice cream by the gallon and Joe, a little bit like me, is chasing that elusive thigh gap that Freddie boasts. Thank you both so much for getting in touch. And again, thank you for all your donations to what we're doing. If you'd like to buy us a brew or an alcohol-free beer, we put it back into the podcast. Find us at soundrebel.co.uk/overtheinfluence and just click on the big button that says buy us an alcohol-free beer. Thank you so much. Also, as you've been hearing, we've been talking a heck of a lot about our past. And my co-host Freddie has appeared on another Sound Rebel podcast this week. He was a guest on a show called Keep Real Mental Health Stories. And he talks in even more detail about why he decided to ditch the booze. And I've got to say, it's an absolutely fascinating listen. Freddie won't mind me bigging him up. I've known him for some time now. But even I learned a lot about him. So just search for Keep Real Mental Health Stories in your podcast app and give it a listen straight after this episode has finished. It's definitely worth 40 minutes of your time. So that's Keep Real Mental Health Stories from Sound Rebel. Okay, right, back to this episode of Over the Influence.
So I think, you know, we've looked a bit about the past drinking culture of the 90s and where we are in the present in terms of the big sober movement and the sober celebrities. But now let's look to the future. And Shazza, I know as a parent of a couple of wildish teenagers, I mean, do you think your kids are going to drink in the same way that we did? Or what's your view?
Absolutely not. No, I don't think they are. I think from a very personal point of view, if I was still drinking... And I've got a 19-year-old son and a 16-year-old daughter. Had I still been drinking and they'd come to me and say, okay, I'm going to a party. Mum, can you buy me this? Can you buy me that, you know, dark fruit cider or whatever? I probably would have done and gone, yeah, just have a couple. I don't go, you mustn't drink, children. You mustn't do this. Obviously, they still go out and they go to parties and they've got a great social life. But I say... just have a couple, but I tell you now, I ain't buying it yet. I try and not be evangelical and say you mustn't drink, but I do sort of try and instill, maybe don't go too stupid, don't do what I did, please. Otherwise, they might be on a podcast in 20 years' time talking about, you know, alcohol-free living. And I look at their social circles, and I honestly believe that it is changing. I don't think they're all out to get wrecked every weekend. I think it's a phase they go through.
Yeah.
We had it with our eldest, and he hugged the U-Bens for a few Saturday, Sunday mornings on the trot. And he's gone, God, it's not nice, is it? It's horrible, the hangovers. I remember once feeding him Calpol. He was that ruined, you know, and Lucozade and all the rest of it. And I honestly believe that, you know, you reap what you sow. If they were still watching me now drinking daily and hammering it at weekends, there's every chance that they could also go down that path. But I think they've also seen the positive changes that have occurred in my life and as a result in the family's life. And it's been a brilliant thing. And I do believe that whether they know it or not, it's influenced them massively. And I think it's okay for teenagers these days to say, we're going to do something else. A lot of them drive, they're just passing the test. So they're not going to drive to the pub and drink and whatever. They've got better things to be doing, I think.
Yeah, it's a different story for me. I think you're absolutely right in terms of, I do think the teenage point of view is changing. And again, you know, as a parent, I can't go to my kids and say, alcohol is bad, you will never drink, because one, that's not real life.
No.
And two, like, because I know I certainly wasn't like that. And, you know, as much as I know about kids and teenagers, if you tell them not to do something, then that's like a green light to go and
do it. They'll do it 10 times over, yeah.
I think in terms of a parent, I certainly remember when I was growing up, the great parent line is, I'd rather you were doing it under my own roof, and so I can control the drinking, and so I can teach you about alcohol in a very, you know, respectful adult way. That's just an excuse for parents to say, yeah, I'm going to go and buy some drinks. I can get drunk with my kids now.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You know, my mum might be listening to this, so I better not drop her too much in it. my dad's not listening to it because he's dead from alcohol-related diseases. So I will, I'll leave that one there and not go down that path. But I think about my own kids. They say mine are younger. They're 7 and 5, but what's interesting and what I'm slightly proud of is that the whole alcohol-free phrases are now in their language. So if I'm, you know, if I bought some alcohol-free beers from drydrinker.com, then my 7-year-old will be there saying, Daddy, is that alcohol-free? Has that only got 0.5% in it? And I'm not going to start hammering it home into them. I'm not going to impart my beliefs on my kids too strongly. But I think it's nice, surely, for them, because they've seen their dad
they're just watching.
Sofa. Yeah,
they're watching everything, aren't they? You don't need to hammer it.
No, I've been there so many times where, you know, you stagger downstairs. Like last year, I'd stagger downstairs on a Sunday morning, put some sort of film on the TV, and I could just lie across the sofa and quietly pass out for another couple of hours. And they didn't say anything, but they saw that. But now they see daddy breaking world records and running races and drinking alcohol-free beers. And you'd like to think, surely, then that has to have a positive effect on them. If I could do the same with bloody iPads, then that would be something totally different. If there could be like a screen time program to get them to go screen time free, I would absolutely love that.
I remember in the heyday of my drinking days, I used to fast forward to when my teenagers were of an age they could drive. And I used to think, well, hey, free taxis. You can come and get me from here. You can come and get me from there. Sorted. Not once have I ever had to ask them. And actually, I'm really quite proud of that now. You know, they've never had to come and pick me up. Only one of them can drive at the moment. The other one's about to start to learn. But, you know, the chances are from this point forward, they'll never have to pick me up slosh from a local establishment, and that's brilliant. Mm. And they just soak up everything they see, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I think it is about, I mean, another kids, I helped out at my kids' like school party as a big, you know, big school thing, but they have like music and everything else. I was asked to man the bar. So it was in the school hall, bar was set up. You think, what's that with society? So your parent, you'd see the parents, they'd come along and they'd be like, yeah, beer please, beer please. Some people get through four or five, you know, in a couple of hours. And again, not judging. And if people want to do that,
yeah, we've been there and done it.
I've been there. I was working on this bar and they said to me, oh, because you're working here, you can have a few for free as well. I was like, oh, brilliant. And it's, it is very much accepted. And it is around helping people to understand there is another way. I cannot be the parent, especially after my own experiences and my parents' experiences. I cannot be the person that turns around to my kids and says, alcohol is bad. If you ever drink, you'll be thrown out of the house or anything like that. Partly because the poor little snowflakes would probably have a heart attack if they're outside in the cold on their own. But it is like, it's about showing them there is an alternative. It doesn't have to be a one-way street. There is an option. I think the more people they can see and the more celebrities they can see of living their best life whilst being alcohol-free surely has to be a great thing.
So that's it for another episode of Over the Influence from Sound Rebel. We would love to hear from you and chat to you online at any time. You can, of course, find us on Instagram and Twitter at Alcohol Free Pod, or we're on Facebook too. Just search for Over the Influence or go to facebook.com/alcoholfreepod. If you prefer to keep your messaging private, that's something we completely understand. We get that. We've got an email address too. overtheinfluence@soundrebel.co.uk. We'll be back next Thursday with another episode of Over the Influence, where myself and Freddie will be talking all about Quitlet. Don't say it quickly. See you next week.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Allie and I live in Southern California. I'm a huge fan of OTI. Their joyful outlook on sobriety is what finally inspired me to quit drinking. I've been a member since day one, and I'm rapidly approaching 365 days alcohol-free, which is unreal. I love that Ben and Shaz are not just the podcast hosts. They also openly engage with members during the multiple weekly Zoom meetings and interact on the community member forum. You will not find a more supportive group of people. There's nothing like this in the United States. I'm beyond grateful to be a part of the Sober Rebellion.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.